Hello and welcome to another USA Hockey Magazine podcast. I'm Harry Thompson, the editor of USA Hockey Magazine. And today we're continuing our conversation with Roger Grillo, who is a ADM regional manager, longtime hockey coach at the college level, and does a lot of work, puts a lot of miles on his car, crisscrossing New England, working with various associations, promoting the various facets of the ADM. So, hey, Roger, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Harry, it's a pleasure being with you again.
You know, Roger, last time we were talking, we were talking about how there's that perception out there that the ADM is really nothing more than mite hockey, cross ice hockey, and you know, it's meant for little kids and things, all the things that, you know, everybody's heard all these conversations. I wanted to just kind of talk to you a little bit about the transition with the ADM, and let's just start with the squirt level and what does the ADM mean at the squirt level?
Well, I think the major focus at squirt age level is implementing a quality practice environment. You know, to get parents and coaches to understand that, you know, listen, the game part of it, the competition aspect of the development process for that age group is important, but not nearly as important as the practice, you know, portion of the development model at the squirt age group. So to get them to understand that the quality practice environment, the quality number of repetitions and touches that the kids get, and to get people to understand the ratio, the practice to game ratio, which is so critical, because what got kind of out of control all over the country, and in particular in my area in the Northeast, is need or this drive to play more games, and to travel, you know, around the region to play games. And what we've learned is that model just doesn't work. It doesn't help develop better hockey players. And in fact, what it does is it leads to burnout. It leads to burnout not only with the athletes but with the parents. And it just rises the cost to play our sport up because of the amount of, you know, times you're jumping in the car to travel 3 or 4 hours for an hour-long game. It just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, to really get parents and coaches to understand to practice the game ratios and how to run a quality practice to make sure that those kids, one, they're entertained, two, they're having fun, and three, they're getting the necessary touches and repetitions so that they can get better and have success in the game portion of the development model.
You know, Roger, the last podcast we were talking and you were saying one of the things that you were most pleased about is walking into a rink and seeing these station-based practices at all levels. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, have become, they love the station-based practices at mites because, you know, you could have one station where you're working on skating, another station where you're working on stick handling, a couple fun games, a couple, you know, so there's a lot of various aspects. But that whole station-based practice model, I mean, that translates up the ladder, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's a necessity, especially, you know, out east here where we have a lot of kids in a small area, you know, small geographical area, and limited rinks, limited ice time from 3 o'clock to 9 p.m. You know, there's just limited opportunities for ice time. So I think the challenge is to really develop that quality environment. And the neat thing that I'm seeing here is not just age groups doing it, but I'll walk into rinks and see mites on the ice with squirts, peewees, and bantams. You know, that the association has really taken a step back and said, how can we maximize, you know, the ice that we do have available, and how do we get our kids to the rink in a quality environment that's going to allow them to have fun and to get the necessary touches and repetitions? In a lot of cases, it's multiple ages working on the same hour of ice and just putting them in different stations. So for me, that's really an exciting change that's taken place over the last 3 years here. And it's been a necessity for a long time. It's been slow coming, but it's really, really taken hold. So yeah, I'm seeing station-based practices at the midget level, which you would have never seen that 3 years ago. And part of it's just people taking a step back and saying, you know, how can we maximize these opportunities for these kids?
If I'm a parent of a, let's say, an 8-year-old, is there any concern, or do people have concern out there about an 8-year-old being out on the ice with a 12-year-old? Or, you know, is that become any kind of an issue, or how does that work within a station based practice where you can have multiple age groups? Because obviously you've got bigger kids and faster kids and stronger kids and all that.
Yeah, I mean, the analogy I use is, you know, if you walk into a pool, you know, the local YMCA, and you have swimming lanes, and then you have a big open area. I mean, you could have Michael Phelps swimming his laps but you could have a learn to swim class in the same pool. It's just water, you know. So, you know, we got to look at it like this is just ice, and we've got to maximize and utilize it properly so that everybody can get better. And in fact, what it really is, it's bringing the model of the pond, you know, where the local outdoor rink where kids would just go down and play it with multiple ages. We've kind of, as the adults took over the game at the organized level with youth hockey, we kind of took away some of that vertical coaching or that vertical environment for our kids, where we have role models built in, we have leadership responsibilities, you know, we have what I call rabbits. You know, the young kids need somebody to kind of emulate. And then reality-wise, do we want our 6-, 7-, and 8-year-olds to try to emulate, you know, Patrick Kane, or do we want them to emulate the really good Pee Wee player in their own association? So I think that the real critical aspect of development is to have role models for our younger kids, and to put our older kids in an environment where they're forced to be leaders and role models and handle that appropriately. So I think for me, it's a huge, huge plus. It's part of what my development was, going down to the local outdoor rink back home in Minnesota and chasing the older kids, or chasing my dad, or if you had kids on the team that had older brothers. I mean, that was critical. I remember my little brother chasing me around, and you know, there was times where, as an older brother, I let him win, give him some confidence, but I also made him work for it. So, you know, it's an important part of the development process, and we've got to bring some of that back in.
Well, you know, Roger, like we were talking about, you were a longtime college coach. You coached at the University of Vermont. You coached at Brown University, in addition to other places. One of the things that interests me is that the practice-to-game ratio for a college player is, on average, is like a 4-2.
Yep.
And then you had little kids who were maybe one practice for every 5 games or whatever. Can you just talk a little bit more about the, you know, the benefit of having the proper practice to game ratio? Once again, sticking with, I know it applies to all levels, but just, as you know, concerning squirts, what is a good practice to game ratio and why is it so important?
Yeah, I mean, if you really peel back the onion of college hockey and the practice to game ratio, I mean, you know, you practice Monday through Thursday, then you play usually Friday and Saturday, but that doesn't even include, like, we used to do a ton of individual skill work with kids, so they would get like even a fifth practice. It might only be 20 minutes, but they might get that fifth session in there where they're really just focusing on their individual skill needs, and then you throw in probably 2 off-ice sessions where they're working on getting stronger and faster. So if you really look at it from a practice standpoint, the college model is probably more like 6-2 if you include the off-ice and then the individual skill work. So for a squirt, we want that practice-to-game ratio to be 3 or 4 to 1, because in reality, where you're going to get better, where you're going to develop, where you're going to really build that base of skills is in the practice model, well, not in the game model. So if you want to have success within the game model, you got to do the work, you know, in the practice model to set the table for that. And that's what's happened over the last 30 years is, you know, everybody's looking for that shortcut on looking for that game success, but not putting the time, necessary time and effort in with quality practices. And what we have then at the end of the day is just kids that don't have the necessary base of skills to move on in our sport. And that's where we're really trying to make a focus at the squirt, peewee, and bantam level with our coaches and parents and administrators to say, listen, the practice model is absolutely critical, and we've got to make sure that we're doing it right, we're doing it well, and that we're doing it enough. And that's really what the ADM guidelines are about at that age group.
Is it an issue that, you know, I think we as parents or spectators, we would all rather watch a game than a practice? Is that where some of the pushback comes?
Absolutely. We want to be entertained. We want our kids to entertain us a little bit on you know, during the game. We want to see the tangible results. But I always use the analogy when I speak, you know, when you sign your young child up for a musical instrument, you don't hand them trumpet and then the next week put them on the stage at school and tell them they're going to have a concert in front of grandma, grandpa, mom, and dad, because it would be disaster. And yet what we do in youth hockey and in youth sports is, you know, we put these kids on this stage, the game model, and we want them to be successful and entertain us and feel good about themselves, but we haven't given them the necessary skills to do it properly. And then at the end of the day, we've failed. We, as the adults, have failed the young kids because we didn't flip-flop that. We didn't put the emphasis on the practice model and the game model in reality. You know, I used to say this all the time. You talk to most college coaches, they love Monday through Thursday, because as a college coach, you can control Monday through Thursday. You have the reins. Really, on Friday and Saturday, you step back and hand the game to the kids and say, okay, now everything we worked on, now you got to go do it. But I can't help you through that. You've got to do it. And that's what people get all messed up on, is they get so excited about the games at the young level, and it should be the opposite. They should be ecstatic about the practice model. The adults should. And then the game is the kids. That's their deal. But we've got to give them the necessary skills to be successful and feel good about themselves in the game model. And that's where the practice-game ratios are so critical.
Do you find that under the old model, that maybe at the beginning of the year you had some of that practice-to-game ratio more in line, and then as the season goes on, people say, well, you know what, we've done a lot of practice, so now it's just time to play a lot of games. Do you find as the season goes on that it gets skewed more games than practices?
Yeah, I mean, from a coaching standpoint, the game is easier because you don't have to put your skates on. You don't have to go on the ice. You just kind of open the door and talk to the kids a little bit. So, yeah, it's less work. And we've got to get that mentality out. We've got to change that mentality. We've got to look at practice as the fun part. The great coaches are the great teachers. The ones that have success in the games are the ones that really get the practice model and how important that is and how critical that is and how professionally you have to approach the practice model as an adult. And that's critical. It's absolutely critical that we get people to grasp that, understand that. And that's been our major focus now at that Squirt and Peewee and Bantam age group is to get people to buy into that and really grasp it. And what we've done, you know, we've worked hard through the modules and through the ADM materials to hand the information to the coaches so they have practice plans and they have the, you know, the necessary tools to be successful. You don't have to be a hockey expert, really, to be a good coach. What you really need to do is just know how to create an environment that is a fun, challenging, competitive, and productive environment for the kids. And then the responsibility then is on them to take that next step.
You know, you talk about, you know, the buy-in. I just wonder, as the ADM continues to, you know, take root in communities around the country, and more people seem to, you know, understand it and support it, I was wondering if the buy-in becomes easier because, okay, we've done this at Mites, we've saw some success, now let's do it at Squirts and we'll see some more success, and that momentum will just keep building as kids go up the ladder of development.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why we started at the bottom, is because otherwise, the challenge at the younger ages is you're constantly trying to educate a new customer base. So you have new people coming into the game. So yeah, you want to start at the bottom and move that up, and so that the practice model becomes second nature. I think the one thing that we've lost, Harry, and I mentioned it before, back in my generation and the generations before, you could run a team-based, system-based practice indoors and still get away with it because what you had was you had the pond, you had street hockey, you had the kids getting the touches and repetitions and the skill development on their own. You know, what's happened is that's kind of gone away, whether it's because of the weather, and especially out east. I know over the last couple of years, we've had very little outdoor ice to even, you know, think about, let alone use. So we've got to bring that pond and that street hockey mentality into the indoor structured adult model that we've imposed on the kids, because they're not getting those extra touches, repetitions on their own. It's just not happening. So we've got to adjust the modern times and really make sure that that's happening so that our kids can move forward with the necessary skills to be successful.
And Roger, just before I let you go, I just want to see is what are some of the other characteristics, if that's the right word, of the ADM when you get to the Squirt level, you know, just how it progresses up that ladder of development?
Well, you know, I think at that point, you know, you're really trying to set up a model where the kids, like I said before, are engaged daily, that they want to come back to the rink, that you're really building that passion for them to stay in the game. You've had them now for a number of years. You know, you want them to kind of grasp some of the practice principles. You know, you're really starting to implement some small area game stuff in practice. That's less, you know, at the younger ages, you're really kind of playing stuff that where they're just out there playing and having fun. And at the Squirt level, you're starting to introduce some principles and some decision-making aspects to the small area games that are going to allow them to be successful in the large, you know, full game. So, you know, it's what it is. It's taking what happens at Mites and just building off of that, adding more things to it. But really, the major focus at the Squirt age group, if I'm educating a group of parents, I'm telling them, listen, when my kid is 9, 10, or 11, you know, when I'm in that age frame, I'm really focusing. If I'm going to pick where my kid's going to play, I'm going to go watch the coaches run a practice. I'm going to see how important the practice model is to that association. And I'm not going to base my decision on who they play against, what league they're in, what their schedule looks like, who else is on the team. I'm going to go watch a couple practices, and I'm going to see how active is my kid, how much fun is he having, and is he getting necessary touches and repetitions, because that, at the end of the day, is going to dictate how good of a Pee Wee or Bantam or midget player he's going to be. So, you know, really the focus at this age group is the golden age of skill development and the practice model.
Absolutely. Well, I lied. I did have one more question for you, and that is, at this age group at Squirts, is this where you start playing full ice games? You make the transition from the blue puck to the black puck. I'm sure there's probably the ideal scenario and then what reality dictates. Can you just talk a little bit about the playing surface? I mean, once again, we're still only talking about 9 and 10-year-olds, but what's the playing surface and the equipment look like for a Squirt player?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely going to make the transition from the, you know, the competition model, the game model, will definitely be moving from the cross ice or half ice to the full ice. I still think, you know, the station-based practices are absolutely critical. To have one single Squirt age team on a full sheet is a complete waste of time. It's counterproductive to the players. There's just, I don't know how anybody can run a quality practice with even 20 Squirt age kids. I mean, I ran college practice for 20 plus years with nearly 30 guys, you know, that average 6 feet. So I don't know how somebody can run a quality practice with only even 20 Squirts, let alone most of them have 12 to 15 kids. So to get those multiple teams on the ice, to get that station-based practice is critical. You know, I think you still got to look at it from an equipment standpoint, and you know, you still got to look at using proper size sticks. You know, it's absolutely critical, you know, proper, you know, this need to put professionally performance-enhanced equipment on, you know, 10-year-olds is crazy because in a lot of ways it's not designed for them. You know, you got to find age-appropriate, size-appropriate, weight-appropriate equipment so that these kids can perform properly and have success and feel good about it. You know, it's the same thing they do in every sport. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, in basketball, they have different size balls because the kid's hands are smaller. So you can't put a professional ball in a 10-year-old's hand. He's not going to have, he's not going to be able to handle it, not going to be able to shoot it properly. And he's going to actually, what it's going to do is it's going to force that young kid to almost practice improper technique. I mean, if you put the wrong stick, you put an adult stick in a 10-year-old's hand, it's really going to force that kid to adjust. And actually, you're going to reinforce improper technique and habits that's going to actually end up having to be reversed when they get older. So you got to be really careful about rushing little kids into adult environment and culture, because there is ramifications at the other side of it.
Well, Roger, we really appreciate the time that you've taken, not only talking to us, but also everything that you're doing to promote the ADM around New England and around the country. So thanks for joining us today, and we will talk to you again somewhere down the road.
Gary, it's a pleasure to talk with you again.
Well, thanks, everybody, for listening, and hope you will tune in again next time for another USA Hockey Magazine podcast as we continue to focus on the various elements of the American development model.